Thank you, everybody, for joining us this morning. I don't usually get this dressed up to speak. We're going to a Simcha right after this. Thanks to Rev Tarrigan and all the organizers for their unbelievable efforts and their patience in shuffling schedules so that I could make it to the chuppah. Not my chuppah. It's been a few years past that. I do have some handouts that are just kind of bullet points of some of the things I'm going to talk about. Leave the extras just on a chair in the back so latecomers come in, they can grab it, because we have very, very little time. It's always interesting, you know. Okay, solve all the issues of parenting. Please do it in 30 minutes. Do not run over time. And it is the notion of social skills and social responsibility, I think, are absolutely critical. When you talk to employers, when you talk to educators, when you talk to parents, and when you talk to adolescents and younger children, nobody comes home bereft, horrified, terrified, because they didn't get 5 points on their quiz or on their test. And if they do, by the next day, it's okay. But if they don't have a friend, or if they've been ostracized, or if they feel they're not connecting in the world, and talk to employers. They're not firing people because they don't have the skills to do the job. They're firing people because they don't have the skills to be people. They say we can't hire young people in the marketplace because they don't know how to interact. They don't know how to work on teams. You talk to teachers, the biggest problem in the classroom is not learning, it's behavior. And in particular, it's social behavior. It's how people get along. So really, it's a very big topic, social skills and social responsibility. But there is one thing that unites them that I want to talk about, or several things that unite them. And then I want to give you three easy things to remember that make a difference. Social skills and social responsibility. What are they? How do we define them? So the first thing about social skills is that just like any other skill that your child or teen develops, these are learned behaviors. Social skills are a learned array of behaviors that range from the simplest thing, like making eye contact when you talk to someone, to the most complex skills of navigating conflict and being able to negotiate, being able to both accept compliments and criticisms, being able to walk into a room and enter a conversation. I don't know about any of you, it's still hard for me. And kids have to do this all the time. I'm so glad they gave me a name tag. You know, it's like, well, people walk up to me and start a conversation. Makes it so much easier. I would, if it were up to me, I would be a very shy, reclusive person. And I would just stay in my house and, you know, wouldn't socialize so much except for the few people I feel comfortable with. But I have to do it as an adult. Kids have to do it all the time. They spend their life in social situations not of their choosing. I get to choose who I spend my time with. Do your teenagers? Most of their day, they're being told who they sit next to, who they're in class with, who their chavrusa is. They're not getting to choose that. So remember, it's a learned array of skills and behaviors. Like any other learned skill or behavior, it takes practice. You may have been blessed with a child who got on a two-wheeler and just rode off into the sunset. But I had three boys who needed a lot of me running after them, holding on to the back of that bike. It takes practice. Bike riding is a good example, because where did you teach your child to bike ride? Probably not on Peninsula Boulevard, Erev Shabbos, when everybody was rushing. You went somewhere to a quiet parking lot. So the practice that we do is much more difficult to do in intense situations. We want to practice new skills in calm situations. So socially, if we've just worked with our child on how to start conversations, how to engage socially, we don't want to say, okay, now go to that bar mitzvah and have fun. Do it. Remember what I told you? Now do it at that bar mitzvah with the loud music playing, 50 boys, none of whom you know well. You're going to be great. That's too intense. We have to move in slow, incremental steps. The piece that's going to be very important in both social skills and social responsibility is the notion of empathy. Empathy is the social skill of being able to feel another person's pain, to experience another person's experience, to put yourself in another's shoes. Now, even empathy can be broken down, because in order to experience your experience, I need to be able to read your face. I need to be able to read your social cues. There's, believe it or not, there's a part of the brain that does that. There's a part of the brain that allows us to understand what a happy face looks like, what a sad face looks like. It allows us to read body gestures and body language. It's developed as early as infancy. It's why infants copy our faces. We smile at infants, and they smile back, right? Because they can see our affect, our emotions, and they copy it and play it back. But just the same way that some children have learning difficulties where, you know, learning that B says buh is harder for them and takes longer, there are some children whose brains are wired in such a way that learning to read faces is harder. Learning to read emotions is harder. We have to say to them, didn't you see that grandma's eyes were tearing up? She was really sad when you visited her last time. We have to sometimes help children who don't have strong empathy meters. Of my three sons, I have one who you could walk in the door carrying 14 packages, sneezing profusely, sweating bullets, and he would say, "What'd you bring me?" And I have another one who, if you so much as, ahem, Ima, are you sick? Do you want tea with honey? Should I make you something? He's an empath. He is a child who has such well-developed... Which one do you think goes to Camp Hask? Which one do you think works for all kinds of, you know, children with cancer? Some children have a natural ability for empathy, and that helps fuel their social skills. Because I can't be a good friend if I can't tell how you're feeling. I can't enter a conversation if I don't know how people are, why people are laughing. It reminds me a little bit, my husband did his graduate work in Israel, and his best friend is a Yemenite whose Hebrew is so fast and so Tamani that I understand about one of every six words. So when we go to Israel and we visit, I just laugh when everyone else laughs. I don't know what they're saying, but I read the body language, and I laugh because everybody else laughed. I can't tell what's going on, but I'm good at reading the language. Those are social skills. Now look at the list under social responsibility, and you'll see we're talking about very similar things. What do I mean by social responsibility? I mean doing the right thing socially. Being the person who others can count on socially. I mean acting in a moral and upright and ethical way socially. So that means even if everyone around me is saying, Rona's a loser, don't let Rona sit at our table, we don't want to tell Rona about that, I'm going to be the person who says, well, I don't know, that doesn't really sound right. Well, why don't we make room for Rona? There's no problem. It means that if everybody is saying, let's go out drinking, our parents will never know, I'm going to be the one who says, wait a minute. I mean, something terrible could happen. We shouldn't do that. It means that if I see harm coming to another person, I'm going to know how, without harming myself or putting myself in harm's way, I can make a positive difference in the world. That's social responsibility. Social responsibility, like social skills, is a learned, but instead of a learned array of skills and behaviors, it's a learned collection of beliefs and behaviors. It's about what I believe is right. Do I believe that it's okay to leave people out of my activities? Do I believe it's okay that somebody's feelings are hurt? It's not my job. It's not my responsibility. Do I believe it's all right to tell lashon hara over someone as long as they're not my friend? I'm doing it privately. No one will know. What's my belief about those things? We'll get to how we inculcate those in children in a minute. This not only requires practice like social skills, it also requires some sacrifice. I have a young girl I'm working with that I've developed this lashon that I call it her wanting brain and her wise brain. Her wanting brain says, you know, she's a young girl, not a teenager yet. You know, she'll say, I want that that pencil on that person's desk, and her wanting brain will just take it. Her wise brain knows you don't take things without asking. But sometimes the wanting brain has stronger muscles and it wins out. The sacrifice of being a socially responsible person is I have to do what's right for someone else, even if it's inconvenient for me. Even if it means I have to delay my gratification or put it aside totally. I have to do that which is right for my friend. It's what we all want in our children. We all want them to put others' needs above their own, not to the extent that they're dish rats, but to the extent that they're good people. We all want that. Like social skills, requires practice and sacrifice. It also requires empathy. I can't look out for other people if I don't know how they're feeling. If I don't know that that's going to make someone upset, then I can't stop doing it or act in a way that protects them. Now, here's the tricky part. If you've ever asked a child from about the age of 7, maybe to 27, if you've ever asked them in a moment when they've behaved in a morally questionable way, they've grabbed something from someone else, they didn't help out a friend, they were greedy or selfish. If you ask them in that moment about their behavior, you'll get responses like, well, who, I wouldn't care. You know, and you ask them the million-dollar question, well, how would you feel if someone did that to you? In the moment, you get those really warm, fuzzy answers like, well, I wouldn't care. Well, I'm not a wuss. Well, that wouldn't matter to me. You know, so that we can't parent based on the feedback we're getting from our children. We have to realize that at times they're giving us self-protective responses. They're saying that because both to themselves and to you, they don't want to admit the reality is I blew it. I didn't do the right thing. I know I did the wrong thing. I do a lot of work in middle schools around the issue of bullying. And I have to tell you, I am so impressed. 99% of the time, kids tell me, we want this to stop. We don't want it to happen. We feel very uncomfortable having it in our school. The reason we don't do something is we don't know what to do. The reason we're going along with it is we're scared. We don't have the right answer. But in their honest moments, they will tell you, we want to be morally, socially responsible people. We just don't have the tools yet. We'll get to that in a minute. Once again, more challenging in intense situations. It's so much easier to be morally, socially responsible for children in Africa. Look, and please God, we should only have to stop using this as an example because the problem should be solved. Look at how Klal Yisrael is united that our boys should come back home safely. And please God, every child, Jewish or otherwise, who is taken should come back safely. Look at how it is easy for children in the five towns where I live in West Hempstead to daven. But it's much harder for them to have someone sit next to them at lunch who's a classmate to say, oh, you look lonely, come sit, who's not their friend. That's harder. Much easier, they will pack up food and books and they'll go to send them off to the Ukraine or to other places. Much harder to give something to a classmate who's in need. It's charity, tzedakah is easier, kindness is easier at a distance. So how do we solve this problem? I want to give you, here's the three, you know, in the limited time we have, here's the three really important things to keep in mind. If we want to raise socially skilled, socially responsible children and teenagers, then we have to value, live, and teach social responsibility and social skills. What do I mean by that? What do I mean by value, live, and teach? And no one of them, by the way, is enough alone. Value. This has to matter to you. Years ago, I got to hear Robert Brooks, the self-esteem guru. He's a psychologist who really is like the leader in the field of self-esteem. And he was talking about how, as parents, we can build our children's self-esteem. And he totally changed my parenting with one question. He asked, what's the first thing you say to your children after a day of school when they come in the door? I didn't say, how was your day? I used to say, my first question was, what's your homework? What's your homework? how much homework do we, you know, I'm a working mother, three children, all doing homework, to plan out the, what's your homework? And what Robert Brooks said is that those opening lines, those questions, what gets airtime in our conversations, communicates to our children what we value. My husband and I are probably never seen without a book in hand. We are academics, we are learners. Our children know we value learning, reading, and knowledge. Do they know we value their social lives? How many times, and I know I was guilty raising my children, I didn't think about it enough, how many times when they came home and I asked, how was your day, it was followed with, how was that math test? How'd you do on the spelling quiz? What did you do for the science fair? Rather than, who did you play with? Who did you sit with? Who did you make feel better today? Who did you share something with? Who did you work well with today? How was the teamwork going? I didn't ask those questions. If you don't ask them, if it's not what you're talking about around the Shabbat table, how do children know that that's what you value? And driving over here, we had a conversation, my husband and I, about my minhag, that you never go empty-handed to someone's house. Never, ever. Doesn't matter if it's my mother, doesn't matter if it's a distant relative, doesn't, if I go to someone's house, they're getting a cake, a bottle of wine, something. And do our children know that? Do they, some of them are now married, they're older, do they know that this is an accepted practice of us, you know, to thank your hostess, this is what you do? And my husband asked me the question, do you think they noticed, even the fact that I did it, do you think they noticed growing up, three little boys, did they notice every time you went to your mother's house you brought her food? Like, do they notice every time you go to my mother's house that you bring her, you stay up extra late the night before, you make her some soup, you bring her food? Do they know that you do it? You do it kind of privately. If you want them to know you value it, then engage them in the process. I should have had them making the soup with me. I should have had them say, write a little note to Safta while we pack up the soup for her, to let them know. And this was brought home to me with two examples. One, I was in a school doing research on bullying, Jewish day schools, 2 years ago. And 2 years ago, I added some new questionnaires to the surveys that I give students. And the questionnaires were about you. They were about parents. They asked, they said things like, my parents feel it's okay to leave somebody out of a game or an activity as long as it's not my good friend. My parents think if someone's being teased, I should just ignore it. And they had to, you know, say, I very much agree, I somewhat agree, etc. School after school that I'm in, children are raising their hands. Dr. Novick, I can't answer question 14. In my innocence, I thought they don't want to rat on their parents. They're not answering the questions because they don't want to, they don't want, they're afraid they're saying something bad about their parents. Finally, like the third school this happens in, I said, everyone is telling me they can't answer these questions about their parents. Could you explain to me why? And one of the kids says to me, well, I can't tell you how my parents feel about these social questions because I don't know how my parents feel about these social issues. I was dumbfounded. I said, you don't know how your what your parents think you should do if, you know, you're inviting to a party and you don't want to invite everyone. You don't know what your parents feel about that? No, I don't know. I asked in the same yeshiva, I said, do you know which restaurants your parents will eat in this neighborhood? Oh, yeah, yeah. Do you know who your parents voted for in the last election? Sure. They talk about it all the time. Do you know which Rav they like, which Rav they... Oh, absolutely. But about issues of friendship and social discourse, they did not know how their parents felt. That's sample number one. Number two, I go home a week after that, and one of my married sons comes for Shabbos with his wife. And before Shabbos, we're tying up the newspapers. We've always recycled in my neighborhood and in my house, but it's a new minhag that they have to be tied. It used to be they just went in a bin. Now they don't take them unless we tie them. So he sees me tying up newspapers, and he says, what? All of a sudden you became eco-mom? I said, what do you mean all of a sudden? Your entire life, there's been a recycle bin outside. Everything in the kitchen. Don't you see Shabbos afternoon, while I'm cooking, I literally have a pile of finished an egg carton, the egg carton is waiting, you know, opened a can, the can is waiting. And then at the end of, you know, Friday when I'm done with my cooking, everything goes out to the recycle bin. Never noticed it. It made me understand, how is it that my children know Shabbos? Like, they saw me keep Shabbos. How is it they know don't touch muchsa things? How is it that, because, I don't know any of you, but in our house, when the children were little, not only did we keep Shabbos, but we spent 20 times every day was probably saying, no, that's muksa, put that down, that's muksa, you can't have that, that's muksa. Not only did we live it, but we valued it by giving it airtime, by talking about it, by saying, Erev Shabbos, we have to put those, you know, those trucks that make noise away because those aren't Shabbos trucks, those are muksa. So we directly spoke about it. We have to directly, we did do something right in our family right before bar mitzvah season. We directly talked with our kids. We said, this is our family minhag when it comes to simchas. We are misameach, the balei simcha, we go. We don't decide, I don't like this venue, I don't like that caterer, I don't like the DJ there, I don't like that boy enough, I went to 3 simchas already this month, I'm not going to the... If you're invited and you don't have a conflict, you go. And your job is to be misameach the balei simcha. You say mazel tov, you dance in the circle, you don't murmur on the side, oh, this is such stupid, I can't believe they have those hot dogs again. You know, you go and you have a good time. So we had that conversation before they knew we valued it. Okay, the next point is living it. As I said, you can't do one without the other. Teens are hypocrisy sniffers. They can scent out hypocrisy wherever it is. So if you are saying we value recycling and then you don't tie up your newspapers, not only do you lose credibility as eco-mom, you lose credibility, period. Because if you are not believable and dependable as a parent, then why should I believe and depend on what you say for anything? Including, by the way, things like curfew and rules, not just moral behavior. You don't do what you say. Therefore, you don't mean what you say. And I don't have to listen to you. So we need to not just value social, moral, responsible behavior, but we need to set the example. That means that we need to be careful about what we say in front of our children. 24/7, 365 days a year, you are a role model, whether you're choosing to be one or not. You may not think they're noticing, but as you are walking home from shul, talking to your spouse about, oh, those people invited us, can't believe we have to go to their house next Shabbos. I really don't like them. How can we expect our children to not engage in that kind of behavior if we do it? And if we say, there's a community, it's not here, where I heard that even preschoolers do serial playdate advancement. What is that? On Monday, Shira invites Devorah to come for a playdate. And Devorah said, on Shabbos. And Devorah says, oh yes, I'll come play with you. But on Tuesday, Leah says to Devorah, would you come play on Shabbos? Leah has a better house. Leah is a more attractive playdate. So Devorah goes to Shira, says, sorry, can't come. And she goes to Leah. And this happens all week long with the playdates advancing so that you keep on dumping people you said yes to as you get better invites. When I was appalled when I heard this, one of the educators in the community said to me, well, you know where it comes from. The adults do this. The parents do this. The parents accept a Shabbos invitation on Monday, but if they get an invite from the big house on the hill, they ditch and they go to the great house. We have to live what we are setting as an example. But the last point I want to say, and this is also extremely critical, is that we have to directly teach social skills and social responsibility. My father-in-law, Alav HaShalom, had a very strong belief in the power of a handshake, and he taught his sons how to shake a hand. Literally, they had lessons in handshaking. You can't be a man, he was a lawyer, you can't work in business if your handshake is wishy-washy. You need to be a man, of integrity, you need a handshake. My mother, Lahavdil, you know, it's different for women, she taught me note writing, how you write a thank you note, how you write, she called them bread and butter notes after you'd been at someone's house, you always wrote a personal thank you note, how you write a note of mazel tov to a wedding, to a simcha, to whatever, that you pour your heart into it. She taught me how to do that, sitting over me saying, no, you don't just write cold, you know, thank you for the gift, hope to see you. You know, you have to put yourself into it. We have to directly teach social skills and social responsibility. Some teaching is often unnecessary. If you're blessed with a child who is a great conversant, who makes great eye contact, who wins and loses games fairly, great, then you don't have to teach those skills. But I had one of my children who, when he lost a game, threw the game board across the floor, flung all the pieces, stupid, I hate this game, it's so stupid, who, when he had trouble learning to ride a bike, threw the bike on the ground and said, nobody smart rides bikes, bike riding is stupid. That's a kid who needed to learn the social skill of failing and losing gracefully. He really needed work on that. He didn't pick it up by osmosis, by looking at watching sports figures, and here's part of the problem. You know, we're living in a world with bad examples. So we've got a World Cup soccer player who three times has bit somebody, and most preschoolers would do that once and would be kicked out of school. He was playing after two times of biting people on the field. I don't get it. I really don't get it. And he's an adult. He's an adult and probably an extraordinarily well-paid and celebrated adult. So this is what our children are living with. So if that's what they're seeing, I remember when Roger Clemens threw the bat. People who are baseball fans and old like me will remember when Roger Clemens threw the bat. I had kids in Little League, and one of my kids came to me, I can't make it up, came to me and said, you know, if I did that, must have been like 7 or 8, if I did that, I would be out of the game. You know, we have rules in Little League. You can't throw bats. So this is the world our children are growing in. We don't have control over that. So we have to teach some of our children directly how to be socially skilled, how to be socially responsible. The ideal time to teach is not in the heat of the moment. It's not. You just threw that game board. You just lost a heated, you know, interaction with your best friend, your hard, you know, your tough competitor, brother, your sister, whatever. Now let me sit you down and teach you how to lose. That's not the time to do it. The time to do it is when he least needs or she least needs to master the skill, when it's a quiet moment. Just a little sideline. Research has shown that women, girls, prefer face-to-face conversation. So a great way to teach your daughters is sitting across from them at the table, having a cup of tea or hot cocoa. Men prefer parallel communication. They're not comfortable with face-to-face eye contact. The car, a baseball stadium, sitting side to side is the most comfortable way to teach boys things. I learned the power of the carpool this way. You know, first of all, they're belted in. They're a captive audience. They're not going anywhere. Great time to have important conversations and say, well, what would you do if? And how would you handle it? The ideal time to practice is not in intense situations. And these are always uncomfortable, but they're very beneficial. And you have to sometimes push beyond the obvious. The obvious is to talk with your child. What would you do if? What would you do if your friends had been drinking or using other substances and invite you to get in a car? So most of your children, I hope, will say, oh, I wouldn't go in the car. Well, don't let it go with that, because here's the tough social skill. That's really easy to say. But they're now, imagine, honey, you say you won't go in the car, but they're all going to say, oh, don't be a wimp. We only had a little bit. We're fine. Tell me what you would say. Let me hear your words. Role play it. You don't have to call it a role play. But tell me, how would you say no? Because they're going to be really insistent. So I'm going to be insistent now. Show me how you would say no. Show me how you would do it. I want to end with, and I'm like over time already, so I'm just going to end with a really quick story, and then you have to be on your way to, these are like, a sixth grader at the end of doing some workshops. Her teacher asked, if they wanted to, the class wanted to give me some feedback. These are workshops on social responsibility. And she raised her hand and she said, Dr. Novick, I went home after your workshops and I told my mother I can't listen to her anymore. I was a little scared. I was like seeing the headlines. Long Island psychologists banned from working with children. Parents up in arms. But she went on to say, because my mother always told me, if you see someone in trouble, if you see trouble, you stay away from it. But after thinking about my social responsibility, after doing these workshops, I realize that if I see a friend in trouble, if I see a friend hurt, and I stay away, then what kind of friend am I? And she went on to say, I end every talk with this because it gives me chizuk. She went on to say, and Dr. Novick, if I see a human being in trouble, or a human being hurt, and I stay away, what kind of human being am I? We want to raise the next generation of human beings. We want to raise the next generation of Jews that have the schus to have all the treasures of Torah life and Torah living, but that are also a light unto the nations. And we have the ability to do that if we live, value, and teach these in our homes. Thank you so much. I've given you two places to connect with me, both a blog and a wonderful website called Storybird, where I write stories for children, teens, educators, etc.
Thank you very much.
I'm Fran Siklik. I don't know if you know some people. You know a lot of people in common.
Thank you.